And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
Late night, midnight on the interstate, and I didn't feel so great until I saw the city.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source with Michael Russo, my guest today, Nick Schultz, the great Nick Schultz, one of the most respected Wild players in history, one of the biggest pros, somebody that I'm incredibly grateful for, because he once let me get away with bashing into his Porsche after Matt Cullen's 1,000 game ceremony, which you'll hear about on the show. So Nick has always been one player that I've just been a huge, huge fan of for multiple reasons. He was just a joy to cover and tough as nails. I mean, just an Iron Man, played the fourth most minutes in Wild history, most shorthanded, by the way, second most block shots in Wild history, second most games in Wild history. So we have a lot of fun on this podcast. What a couple weeks for the Minnesota Wild. 8 in a row at home. They're a league best 12-2-2-1 in their last 15, 12-3-1 since their outbreak. But as a sports writer, you always either take the negative or positive. We'll do the positive in this way. We'll cut out that first game against LA, and they're a league best 12-2-1 in their last 15 with a league most 56 goals. And what's crazy is they're doing this with an 8.1% power play. We're talking like historically bad, potentially, if they don't raise that percentage point by at least 1.5 to get over the Tampa Bay Lightning of yesteryear. So they're doing this because they're, even strength-wise, they are just outstanding. They rank second in the league with 69 even-strength goals, but first with a plus 26 even-strength goal differential. And their penalty kill, which went 11-on-11 during this three-game win streak against Arizona, their penalty kill has climbed to third best in the league at 86.2%. And they're getting just sensational goaltending, which, you know, it's funny because the last couple of years we've been sort of saying that, not sort of, we've been saying it, that defensively, the Wild were one of the best teams in the league, and if they had just gotten better goaltending, they would have been a better team. And what is going on right now? Since February 18th, Kakan and Talbot ranked first in the NHL in goals against average, tied for first in shutouts, tied for second in save percentage, tied for third in fewest goals allowed. Overall, they're third best in the league at save percentage, sixth best in goals against average, and sixth in fewest goals allowed. And Talbot's 6-4-1. As you all know, Kaapo Kähkönen has won a franchise rookie record 9 in a row. This is the reigning 2019-20 AHL Goalie of the Year. He stopped 233 of the last 246 shots for a 1.44 goals against average and a 9.47 save percentage. Only four rookies in NHL history have posted a longer win streak than Kakkonen's nine in a row, and none since 1973-74. So, man, things are just going well. Things do get tougher here. They go to Colorado for two games. They're probably going to be without Carson Soucy for at least one of them. Soucy has a hearing today for his charging major on Connor Garland in last night's game. Originally, they called it an elbowing major, and right away, you just knew it wasn't an elbowing major. The elbow really didn't make connect. It didn't connect straight on with his head. But then when you saw the behind-the-angle replay of the hit, he launched into him, and because of that, there was head contact as well, and the league doesn't like hits like that. So Carson Soucy is going to get his bell rung today by the NHL. But man, things are going well. Kirill Kaprizov, still incredible. Awesome chemistry with Matt Zuccarello, making these games fun to watch. Kevin Fiala's starting to come on as well. Kaapo Kakkonen's giving Kirill a run for his money in the Calder race. And the Wild are suddenly have a 9-point edge on a playoff spot. But without further ado, straight from the source interview with one of my favorite people in the world, Nick Schultz. And as mentioned, one of my favorite people of all time, one of the biggest professionals and most respected Wild teammates in history, Nick Schultz. He's second in Wild history with 743 games, tough as nails, fourth most minutes in Wild history. Nobody in Wild history has played more than his 2013 shorthanded minutes, second in the 980 block shots. And, you know, Nick, you encapsulated the kind of old hockey cliche about a defenseman that if you don't notice him, he's doing his job, and you just went about your business on a nightly basis. You block shots, neutralized forwards, just played game after game after game with you know, through injury, old Iron Man streaks and everything. You know, how did you do it?
Yeah, thanks for the introduction, Mike. Yeah, it's fun to be talking to you again. Yeah, I was just fortunate. I didn't have a lot of you know, major injuries and stuff, and got a chance to play a long time, and just learned from an early age from a lot of the guys on the team, like Andrew Burnett, Dwayne Rollis, and some of those guys, Brad Bombardier, just how to be, like you said, how to be a pro and take care of yourself off the ice and at the rink, and making sure you're doing the right thing. So I think that went a long way in my career of, you know, and growing up early as a young kid. I left home at 15 and had to kind of figure things out, you know, to play hockey and being away that young. I think you grow up in a hurry, and when you turn pro at 19, then I think it's a big adjustment. So I think that probably helped in the maturity away from the rink and then on the ice as well.
Yeah, and Nick, second draft pick in Wild history, part of that 2000 team. And, you know, really the last couple months, I've been doing a lot of 20-year anniversary shows looking back at the glory days of the Minnesota Wild. What was that like? Last week we had Darby Hendrickson on, and you got to play with Darby as well, and Bruno and all those guys, be coached by Jacques. It had to be just an incredible time to be part of the infancy of an entire organization.
Yeah, I think the people in Minnesota, being a part of that first draft and coming to that first training camp, just to see the excitement in the city, obviously, with getting the franchise back and you know, the excitement was there, and the players were excited to be a part of it. Me as a young player coming into that and getting a chance to play in front of, you know, packed building every night and really playing in a, you know, a great city to live and be a part of and raise a family in, and all those things kind of factor into guys, you know, enjoying being there and being a part of that that team. So I think it was, you know, like you mentioned with Jacques as a coach and some of the guys we had in our team there, it was nice to be a part of that and learn from that as a young guy.
You, at the time, you were so respected by Doug Risebrough. I remember we were at Parade Ice Garden once, and right when practice began, they announced a 6-year extension for you, Nick. And at the time, longest extension in Wild history. That contract in a whole, I mean, was there any doubt in your mind that you were going to sign that long term at that time with the Wild?
You know what? It's tough. Yeah, I was going into my last year of my contract, and I didn't really know. I'd sold my condo downtown to Josh Harding and kind of moved into a rental at Calhoun Beach Club. And honestly, it's hard as a player. You don't know. I was hoping I would stay there. We just had my son, Jake, or whatever. So we were a young family, and obviously we wanted to be there. But it's the uncertainties of hockey and the business of it. And when Doug came there, there was no doubt in my mind that I wanted to stay there and be in Minnesota. And when you're there that long, you think you can be your whole career there. Obviously it didn't work out that way, but it was, you know, when I signed that deal, it was, you know, we were very excited and bought a home in Edina, and that was kind of we thought we were going to be there, and just, you know what I mean? We were invested in the team and in being a part of that city, and just really, really enjoyed it there.
I was disappointed when you sold your condo to Harding, because I used to run into you all the time in Northeast there, you and you walking your dogs with your wife, Jessica.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. And then your home in Edina became sort of like the transition home for all these different Wild players over the years, right? It was just constantly after you left Minnesota, it went, I think, to Cullen. I remember I interviewed Cullen in your old house for a story. I think it went to Zach Parise at one point as well. Yeah. People love that home because of the little pond in the back.
Yeah, exactly. That was part of the reason we bought it. You know, so many ponds and places in Minnesota there, and to have that, I always dreamed of that as a kid. I always skated outdoors and stuff, but to have it in your backyard was kind of something I thought would be super special, and it was kind of part of the selling feature why we picked that spot or whatever. And then when that summer when they signed Zach and those guys their contracts, it was you know, they just said a couple of them had been out and looked at it. And I was fortunate that he bought it off me. And I don't know if he still has it or not, but there's a few guys that he's mentioned that have been through, and it's a great spot, and it's a, you know, a great place to live there and raise your family. So we had, you know, a lot of good memories there.
I remiss to say that Nick is now a player development coach in Philadelphia, where he ended his 1,000-plus game career with Chuck Fletcher and all those guys in Philadelphia. I bet you never thought that you'd wind up working for the Flyers after your playing career at the time that you played in Minnesota and Edmonton.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, just kind of when it ends, you know, every player kind of, like they always say, wants to play as long as they can, and you don't really plan your ending. And it, you know, I was very fortunate to play for 15 years. It came to an end. We liked our time here in Philly and where we live in Haddonfield, New Jersey. There's lots of ex-players here, and you see that in some of these cities where guys stay around. They enjoy the communities that they're in. Their kids are happy. Their families are happy and stuff. And it's a great great spot here. So when Chuck got hired, it just kind of worked out having a relationship with him, even though he did trade me out of Minnesota to Edmonton at the time to one of the worst teams in the league. So I still kind of give him a little bit of grief about that. But no, it's fun just to have him around. He knows what type of person I am and dealing with these young guys in the player development role and Brent Flair's here, and get to spend a lot of time with him and stuff. And it's kind of nice coming full circle and being on the other side and get a chance to help these other kids that have been drafted, if they're in Canadian junior or US college or with our American League team here at the Phantoms, just really, you know what I mean, trying to be there and helping these guys out, get to the next level and help the Flyers. Yeah. So
I don't know if you remember the night before you were traded, you guys played a game at home here at Xcel Energy Center, and I grabbed you alone after the game and I said, hey, I just want to let you know I'm reporting tomorrow that they're probably trading you to Edmonton. Yeah. And you were, I remember, but it was like one of those things, just because of the respect level for you, I'm like, I didn't want you to be shocked by it the next morning when the Strib opened up. But I mean, that was, I remember your face at the time. You were just sort of like, sort of blindsided about it.
Yeah, I wasn't, like you said, I wasn't expecting. I kind of knew in that game, I think it was against San Jose, and they had me out on the power play, and I actually scored my last game with a power play. I'm like, well, these guys finally figured it out. They're going to put me on the power play, and then just to get traded the next day. So it kind of all comes together after it happens. So, but it's, no, it all worked out. Like I said, Minnesota's great, and that's what happens. You know, when I moved to Edmonton, a team where I grew up as a child, cheering for it and got a chance to play there. We didn't have great teams. The lockout shortened year, we were close there with Ralph Kruger to make the playoffs, and it was a great experience to get a chance to play in a Canadian market on a, you know, a team I cheered for growing up, having family and friends around and stuff, and everything in life happens for a reason. Every spot we went, we, you know, really enjoyed our time. So
I had Nate Prosser on a KFan a couple of weeks ago, and I said to him sort of the same joke. I said, it took you 10 years in the league for Mike Yeo to realize that you could pinch in on the power play. I mean, on the, you know, at even strength, don't have to stay back at the blue line.
Yeah.
What was Ralph Kruger like? Obviously a tough day for him and just everything that's going on in Buffalo. He's out of a job. At least he gets a almost $4 million severance package.
Yeah. You know what? I really enjoyed my time with Ralph. Adam, the 1 year, like I said, the lockout short year, and he did a great job with our group there. He's a great communicator, you know, a great guy, a good hockey mind, and he kind of got the raw end of the deal in Edmonton there too when they switched management and stuff, had the 1 year. And I think just in Buffalo right now, same thing. It's just kind of a tough situation. He's had a kind of tough go. I don't know who it takes to kind of get in there and turn that team around, but it's, you know, it seems like I don't necessarily know if it's the coaches, as you kind of been through a few there, and they've changed a bunch of management and all down the line there. So I think there's got to be something, you know, different shake up there. You feel bad for someone like Ralph, who's just a great guy, and you know, you feel sorry for guys. These coaches, it's tough. It's a tough business, and if you can't get the guys going and winning, it's you're kind of the first one to fall. So
yeah, I feel for Kevin Adams, our general manager now as well. I covered him down in Florida, just an absolute class act, and hopefully he could figure out a way to turn the tide there. Nick, what being player development coach in Philadelphia, what is the role? Is Chris Stewart still working there, by the way? Do you work with him?
So Stewie, yeah, they hired Stewie after this past year or whatever, so he's around. It's tough now with all the protocols and COVID and stuff. He came in for training camp and had to quarantine and test, and was around here for a couple weeks and went back to, he's up in Minnesota, got in on the hockey camps up there and stuff. So he's back there right now with his young family and stuff, but normally he would be in or around the prospects and stuff as well, kind of helping out. So there's a chance, you know, he'll probably come back here at some point and have to do the testing and quarantine and stick around for a while and help out as well. So.
And in terms of, Philadelphia, a ton of prospects. So I'm sure you're going back and forth to their farm team as well.
Yeah. So Allentown is probably a little over an hour from our place here in Jersey or whatever. So we go there, and they got some really high end forward prospects there now. Some D prospects. There's a bunch of kids. It's first year pro for them. So kind of get down there and help out with the coaching staff there. Go on the ice with them, help out after, kind of watch their games, go up for quite a few of their games, and just kind of be in constant contact with these guys and what they need to do to continue to develop, continue to get better, and ultimately one day, you know, help the Flyers. So
And the other thing that you do, I know, is coach your kids, right? At hockey. Yeah, I remember seeing you in Raleigh about 4 or 5 years ago. You were down there for a hockey tournament.
Yeah, you think talking about Kevin Adams and his pressure he has right now, he was coaching his 07 boy in Buffalo before he took the job with the Sabres, so he's got a little more pressure than I do coaching 07. Maybe he was back there right now, but no, it's fun. Yeah, I mean, it was like you said, when you're done playing the first couple of years, I didn't do anything. So to get a chance to coach my son and be involved, especially when you play, you're gone so much away from all your kids, and I have two younger girls that are 9 and 11. So to get a chance to be around them and instead of away on the road and all that stuff as you play or whatever. So it's been special to do that, and they got a good group of kids on his team, and it's really fun, kind of, you know, helping out with those young guys and they're, you know, kind of realizing their dreams, hopefully to get to Division I college someday and just kind of further their career and their academics. So
are there a bunch of former players that coach your kids there? I know Brizgalov was telling me last year that he does that.
Yeah, Brizzy's around the area, so he's his son's in a year older than my son or whatever, so he's a goalie. He's an excellent goaltender and stuff. There's lots. We were just away at a tournament this weekend, and Sean Horkoff, who I played with in Edmonton, is there. His son is an 07, plays on Honeybaked. Brad Stewart, who I played with World Championship, he was there with his son from LA Junior Kings. So all these guys, kind of ex-players and multiple teams, kind of are, you know, coaching their kids and helping out, which is great, and I think has helped in USA Hockey and a lot of these markets where guys have stuck around and been able to help, you know, develop these kids. So
Nick, it's been we've gone, what, 12 minutes into this podcast and we haven't brought up the Porsche incident. I got like so this story has become so famous in Minnesota. I've told it so often. I even talked with it about Jared Spurgeon on a podcast recently that so many people, I mean, I probably got 50 tweets when I said that I had you on my podcast about this, but we got to tell the story about it. So it's Matt Cullen's 1,000th game. Afterwards, you guys have a party at the Downtowner. I go to Tom Reed's. So I didn't go to the Matt Cullen party, but shares a parking lot. And after the game at like midnight or something, I back out of a space and right away I hear crack. And I get out and it's right away I just slammed into a Porsche. And so now I know right away I've just hit a player's car. I mean, it had to be, right? And what's amazing about this is, like, you know, you're immediately like, you're horrified. You're like, all right, who do you hope the car belongs to that you're not going to absolutely make a total fool out of yourself? And I was thinking, I hope it's kind of Schultz or Cullen. And I can name about 6 players on the team that I'm like, I pray to God it's not them. And then immediately I see Jarrett Spurgeon and his dad, Barry, looking at me because either you guys were just going on a father-son trip out east to, I think, Philadelphia and Toronto, or just came back. And and I go to Spurge and I'm like, whose car is it? And he looks at me, he goes, I think it's Schultzy. And I was like, all this weight like came off my shoulders. But you take it from here, because you were in the downtowner when Spurgeon came in and told you that, hey, Russo just slammed into your car.
I mean, I thought it was funny, actually. I mean, it's a little different if there's a bunch of damage, which there was not. So I don't know if there was much to yours, or maybe a little bit. I mean, it was nothing major anyway. It wasn't like you totaled the cars or whatever. But no, I thought it was, it was an accident. I was never one like that to be all fired up about stuff like that. So it was, but I thought, like you said, it's a great story and something I'll never forget him coming in and tell me, especially that it was you running into my car. So, I mean, I was thinking in the back of my mind, I better only get good press from now on. You better not say anything bad about me in the paper. Even if I'm dash three and cost the team the game, you better be on my side. So
I remember like Spurgeon was running across there on Kellogg, Nick. And I remember I screamed at him and I'm like, Jared. And I'm like, please don't make a scene. Like, I don't need like the entire team coming out here. Yeah, then I proceeded to have like the most awkward 45 second chat with Barry Spurgeon. You know, like I'm sitting alone in this winter in January in front of a Porsche that I just hit of one of Jared's teammates. And I'm like, so how are you? It was just absolutely mortifying. And then, as you said, you come across the street and you're just laughing. And I remember I'm like profusely apologizing and you're just like, go home. And I'm like, no, seriously, I'm like, go home. And I remember, as you said, I was like asking you for like 3 or 4 weeks. I'm like, are you sure? Are you sure? And I remember I came up to you in the Pepsi Center locker room one day. And I'm like, please let me just pay for the, you know, because there was, it was scratched up a little.
There's a little bit of damage, but not much. So.
Yeah. And I did promise you immunity for a month from it. So.
That's good.
I'm like, except for turning the puck over in overtime for a breakaway, you are free. Clear of any Nick Schultz mentions. It's not positive.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Yeah. So, well, I appreciate it, Nick. I'm forever grateful for you. How's the rest of your family? I got to know your brothers, Chris, especially, and Terrence, and I got to know your mom. Your mom was so nice to me once. She actually, she planned this like scrapbook for your 1,000th game. I don't know if you have it. And she had me write a something in the scrapbook and send some articles, if I remember. Like, how's the rest of your family?
Everyone's doing great. Yeah, my mom's back in her hometown in Saskatchewan. So she's kind of in the town where we grew up. And I have one, my grandma Schultz, still alive and in the home there at 97. So we go back and see them. My brothers are both in Alberta. One's in Calgary. One's in Okotoks, just outside of Calgary. The other one's in Medicine Hat. So we go back in the summer. We got a place out in British Columbia. We spend on the lake in the summer, so we head back out and hang out with family and stuff, try to get back at Christmas for a little bit, which we were unable to this year, but yeah, generally that's kind of, and they make trips out here if they can, or my brother Terrence generally comes out for a trip every year and take them to some sporting events or go to Atlantic City or take them into New York City, kind of do something fun with them. So it's everyone's doing good, their kids are doing well, and it's it's nice to kind of get back home and see them when we can.
Yeah, I used to call your mom Mayor Schultz because she was the mayor of Strasbourg, Saskatchewan. She gave that up.
Yeah, she's not the mayor anymore. I think she's had enough. I think she did her two terms or whatever, 8 years, 10 years, whatever it was, and kind of had enough. But she's been on the town council there forever, and she does a great job. It's just a small little community of about 800 people in northeast of Regina, so it's not a big center, but she loves it there and does a great job for the people there. And growing up, my dad was, had a key to the rink and we could go in anytime we wanted to. So it's kind of nice in a small town to have that and have people really, take pride in the community they live in. So,
yeah, your dad was such a sweet, sweet guy as well. My first ever father-son sit down that I did on the father-son trip out to Huntington Beach, we were at the Marriott. Your dad was part of that. And I know that he meant an absolute ton to you.
That father's trip was so fun. I remember, I don't think they can take, parents on trips as long anymore with the CBA. They kind of change all the rules, but the Wild really did a good job with the mother's trip, the father's trip, and having him out there. I remember taking him to Universal Studios. He hated rides, and we had him down. I got a picture coming down the big ride, and he's just terrified or whatever. So yeah, we had a good time. So it was, something special to be able to take your parents, both my mom and my dad, obviously on trips like that. And it's, something just really special to have those memories. So,
Yeah, and sadly, Robert passed away shortly before training camp 1 year as well. But then you got to bring your brothers on some of these mentor trips as well, which had to be Chris was a hoot on these trips.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think the one Miko was my roommate, and the one was to Philly here. So Miko wasn't playing at the time. So my brother was out. We would go for dinners. They would have dinner set up, and then Miko and my brother would be out having beers after, and I was back going to bed. So it was. It was fun. They had a blast. Same thing with your brothers. I mean, having two older brothers, as a younger sibling, you kind of owe a lot to them and look up to them, and they kind of, deserve a lot of credit for myself and where I was in my career and stuff too. So it's kind of nice to treat those, and the teams let you bring your brother, having lost my dad, a chance to be able to bring my brothers each on a trip and treat them and to the experience of playing life in the National Hockey League and how fortunate you are. So.
Carol, did she, I can't even remember. Did she go on the mother-son trip?
Yeah, she was on the mother's trip where we went down to California. They had the moms over at some swanky hotel on the beach and they were touring around Rodeo Drive and just having the best time. And she was, thought she was like all the moms. Like, I think that's why they kept them away from the guys, just like chatting and like just too much sometimes. So, but they had a blast and same thing, memories that those ladies and those moms will probably have forever. So
yeah, absolutely. I remember that trip. That was when Jacques said that Jacques had a quote like, I think you guys lost in LA and he was going to have like the moms talk to you before the game in Anaheim. And you guys had a big win in Anaheim because the moms, nobody's scarier than the moms, you know. What was what was it like being coached by Jacques? I mean, that had to be just kind of at times intimidating, but at times just incredibly rewarding as well.
Yeah, I think as a young guy coming in there, all of us young players learn from. I think Marion too, being the first, like his game, and you see him go on to win a cup with the Kings and stuff and just become an all-around player, right? Like the little details in the game that everybody talks about that are so important or coaches talk about and stuff, he instilled that in all his players, right? And it wasn't he took the time after practice. Now you see a lot of time the head coach is off with all the video and stuff they do. But he would stay out and he was the one out there working with the guys. It was the D on stick position on a 2-on-1, how to play a 1-on-1, little details of the game, shooting the puck, different things, whatever it was. He was the one out there and he loved the game and loved teaching the guys. And I think about myself in a player development role, that's pretty much what he was. It wasn't like it was very team oriented, but he worked with every single guy and in different, specific details to the game. I think that just helped a lot of us young guys as players. Pascal Dupuis, that was there. I mean, there's lots of guys you could go down the list that really, really benefited from having him and Mike Ramsey and Mario Tremblay, all these guys as coaches, as a young player that had the background that they had and the ability to teach the game. And I think that was, huge reason why, if you can have that as a player and as a young player, that really, really helps you figure out how to become a pro, how to play the game the right way. And I think I learned a lot from Jacques off the ice too, because I came into every training camp and he would sit me to start the year. I think it was like my fourth year that I finally had a season opener and he played me on forward with Brian Rolston and Todd White, I think. And I took a goaltender interference penalty. I was going to the net and ran over Kiprusoff. And then after that, I think I maybe had a couple of shifts after that. So, I mean, he always made it hard on me as a young guy. And I think that, really helped me, train in the summer, make sure I was doing the right things. And even though I thought I came in great shape, he always kind of set me in my place. I think it goes a long way having those experiences as a young player. So,
yeah. Imagine how many games you would have played if you weren't set some of those games, Nick. We haven't talked about 03 yet. I mean, that had to be just an absolute, a blast. We had Darby on last week talking about, just that entire playoff run and just, how the state of hockey really just, fell in love with this team.
Yeah, I think it was pretty special. So soon in the franchise history and to, make the playoffs and then to knock off two powerhouse teams being down 3-1 and just to see the excitement in the city, winning those game sixes and having to fly out that night to Colorado and Vancouver in the next series and winning game sevens. It was just something really special. And it was too bad that series against Anaheim didn't go better than it did. Right. It was such a fun ride those first couple rounds or whatever. And just, we couldn't solve Jaguar and it was tough. I thought we were on a roll kind of, and had guys that you talk about a team buying into their roles and just everybody wanting to win for one another. So it was a special run and it was, something to be, pretty honored to be a part of and be a part of that group. So.
Nick, we'll take a quick break in a couple of seconds because I have a bunch of Twitter questions for you. But I did, before we take the break, want to ask you about Mikko Koivu. And, you mentioned him earlier in the show. He was your roommate. First of all, early in his time, what was it like to be roomies with Mikko?
It was great. I mean, just to be, with someone that was, such a great talent and just a really good friend off the ice. And I think anyone that comes into the team that you're around the same age, you're hanging out with them, and you get a chance to room with someone that. And he really was a pro, and everyone talks about how like serious and stuff he was, but he was, really fun off the ice. And you see that he's just very competitive. And I think you see that in his nature, just his dad kind of same thing, coaching him and bringing him up. And with Saku and stuff, he kind of had that pedigree, right? And it was just really fun to be around him. And he worked his ass off in practice, and it was so fun to go out and compete against him in practice and stuff and have that. I think that's what makes teams better, when you go out and you can compete and practice and work, and then you're ready for the games. And I just really enjoyed having him and being around in the room and away from the rink and going out for dinners and all that stuff. So I think it really just kind of helps when you have those relationships with guys on the team.
I don't know why, I just had this flashback. We were in Edmonton once, and you guys were all eating at the Ruth Chris the night before a game. And I was sitting in the bar area watching hockey, and you guys were all lined up. There was like five of you all lined up at the bar watching hockey, drinking like one glass of red wine. And I remember looking at you guys thinking like, man, this sport has changed from when I first started covering. And people were, you'd go on the road and Lyle Oderline would be pounding beers left and right. And you guys are just sitting there drinking wine, watching hockey, and, regular night out on the road.
Yeah, definitely a change in that regard. So not that we didn't pound the beers maybe on opportunities when we had chances where we had nights off in Vancouver after a game and you didn't have to play until Tuesday in Minnesota or whatever it was. But definitely, yeah, it was not, it was like you said, the game it's changed, and even more so now, right, where you really got to take care of yourself. But it's nice to have those where you're on the road and you can be together as a team and go out for a glass of wine, nice dinner the night before. And that's how teams kind of really, really bond and come together. And you feel sorry for the guys right now with what's going on, not being able to, sure, they're hanging out maybe a little bit in hotels and stuff. Yeah. You kind of lose that part being away from the rink and having that where you're around your teammates. So.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Nick, one of the most funniest stories that I wrote about you, I remember, was when you hit your 600 game mark and 10 years in the league, which meant at the time, now all players get their own rooms, but at the time it meant that you were allowed to get your own room, and Mikko Koivu refused to let you move out and stop being his roommate.
Yeah, exactly. He didn't want to be, without me, I don't think. So it was fun. Yeah, like I said, we had a good situation. We kind of were on the same page when we would get up in the morning, when we'd have breakfast, when we kind of had our naps in the afternoon and stuff. And honestly, on the road, it's tough. I mean, some of us as young guys in the back in the city, we lived on our own or whatever. So there, if you could have a roommate, it was that much more enjoyable to be around somebody or have somebody in the room. So I think it changes as you get older and you have kids and things like that. Some guys like it on the road to have that peace and quiet. But I think as young guys, it's fun to have that and have somebody in the room to hang out with at night if you're watching a movie or just kind of talking and stuff instead of laying in the room by yourself. And like I said, we had a good situation, good setup. We enjoyed being around one another, and it was something that, yeah, he wouldn't let me leave him. So I think we got one chance where we kind of had our own rooms, and it was kind of nice. So we maybe had a little breakup there at the end, but it was fun while it lasted.
Lastly, Mikko, what do you think he's going to do now that is he retired? Have you chatted with him? I just can't imagine him totally out of the game. I know he's got to figure out some stuff with his personal life, where he's going to live, all that type of stuff. But what's your gut say?
Yeah, like you said, I think it's hard. It's hard when it first ends. And I think for myself, same thing. I had a couple years till I had the opportunity when Chuck reached out to me with this. But it's I was fortunate with my son. I know his kids are a little bit younger, but it's nice to be able to be around your family and your kids a little bit more. Like you said, all that has to factor in where you're going to end up. And when I was done, we had always planned going back to Calgary, and my family didn't want to move back. My kids and stuff, we liked where we were and thought I had kind of a little bit more opportunity here for my kids and my family. And so it's tough. It's hard when it's over to figure out exactly where you want to be, what you want to do. I know his brothers, I think, spent an extra year or two over North America before he moved back to Finland. So I think there's a lot of things that factor in, but I mean, as a player, it's tough not to be in the game after. I find you see guys that are getting in broadcasting and things like that. I don't know if that's necessarily Mikko, but I think if he can be a part of a team and the experiences that he's had and how he is as a leader, I think he would be, pretty valuable to any team. So
I'd love to see Miko on Fox Sports North. That would be an absolute treat. that would be hysterical.
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't know if that's gonna happen, but I could see
7 second delay.
Yeah. These young guys, I mean, him being around young guys and just with his, like I said, his leadership and he's a such a great guy and a good team guy. So I think he has a lot to offer if he wants to get involved in with a team or organization. For myself, I know I had a chance to play a long time and one thing I didn't do was win a Stanley Cup. So I think it's kind of nice. You know, those guys that do media and stuff, you kind of lose that opportunity, right? So if you can kind of stay involved with the team and push, and regardless what your role is, you're kind of still a part of it and still helping in some factor. So
yeah, no doubt. It would be awesome to just see Miko like lose his mind on the air though, like when the linesman kicks. Like there's been like this epidemic this year of linesmen just every faceoff kicking a center out, yeah. And it could just see Miko just finally snap on the air. Let's do this, Nick. Let's take a break. I have a bunch of Twitter questions for you, but I also want to tell everybody that you know, if you go to your Athletic app or the website. You'll see a little icon in the corner to help you get to podcasts. We have podcasts throughout, not just Nick Schultz this week, but Steve Levy of ESPN joins Scott Burnside and Pierre LeBrun on Two Man Advantage of the Athletic Show Wednesday at the Athletic, and Ryan Hardy, the GM of the USHL Chicago Steel, joins Craig Custance on the Full 60 this week at the Athletic. I talked to Ryan a couple months ago about Brendan Brisson, just a great interview.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Nick, as I mentioned, I got a ton of Twitter questions. All ask me if I ever made you whole about your Porsche. We already discussed that. It's unbelievable how many people know the Porsche story. Yeah, I mentioned you and I got like honestly like 50 tweets. So maybe I've told it a little too much.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know what I haven't asked you is, so I'm going to Denver later today for the Wild games there the next couple days. And you once left your appendix in Denver, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah, that was really tough. Looking back on my career, that was one of the, you don't really say regrets, but that's something that I look back, something I couldn't control, but just kind of, we had a really solid team that year and
won the division.
Won the division, had Colorado that, and coming in, I think it was our last game of the season or second, it was depending on how we did in that game, who we matched up against, if it was Colorado or Calgary in the first round, and we kind of got beat up against Calgary that year. And we kind of wanted Denver as our matchup or whatever. And yeah, just whatever, after practice that day at Parade Ice Garden, I just, something didn't feel right and got there and thought I had the flu or something was going on and didn't play in that last game and came home we were having a team pitcher and found out that I had to get my appendix out that day and missed kind of the first, came back first five games of the series, came back for game six, which we ended up losing out in. But I think it was very, very tough to swallow. Just, you know, great team was a big part of it. That year was kind of in the prime of my career and stuff. And it was, you know, for all of us, I thought we had a really good opportunity. Obviously Colorado was a great team and it wasn't going to be an easy first round series, but yeah, that was definitely tough and something, like I said, you can't control, but if I could have had that back, it would have been nice to be able to play in that series. So
yeah, and somehow you got back in the series and played the final game, which I don't know how you do because you're supposed to miss a couple weeks.
I remember before that you actually wrote an article right after I had the appendix, like, oh, you had favored us to win it. I remember you saying, oh, with Nick Schultz out now, maybe the Wild don't have as good of a chance. I remember Pavel Demitra. That's fucking bullshit. That's like, pardon my language, or if you beat Pavel, but he's like, he said, that's not, you know what I mean? Like, we still got to get, which is great, which is the right response. Right. But it was tough. I mean, it was a great team, a great group of guys. I thought we really had a good group there to have a run again that year. And it just didn't happen. So.
Yeah. It's funny that you said that, because it's like, every time I think of Demitra, you know, and I loved covering him. I thought he was a great player. I was so excited when the Wild acquired him too, because I loved watching him play for St. Louis. But it is funny, the first practice in Denver in the play, you know, I walk in the locker room and he just annihilated me. Like, Colorado in six, Colorado in six. And like, you know, and I'm like, you're missing your top pair defensemen and you got to play Sakic and Forsberg and all these guys tomorrow. Like, what, Hayduke and it was Drury still on that team? I can't remember.
He may have been.
And I'm just like, I'm like, you know, like, what do you want me to do, Pavel? Like, you know, but it was like a real scene. It was like, I walk in the locker room and it was just like, whoa, I was not expecting it. But I do remember like game 82, you were sitting above me in the press box at the Pepsi Center and you weren't feeling well. I'm like, well, that can't be good. And then it's funny. I stayed a couple extra days because the Wild were playing Colorado. So I was going to start going to some Avs practices and get some, you know, features on Sakic, Forsberg, things like that. And I'm having dinner at the Ted's Montana Grill when I got the word that you landed in Minnesota and had appendicitis. And I remember one going back to write the news story, but I remember also calling the Star Tribune and changing all my previews because I just thought it was such a huge loss for the team.
Yeah, I remember because Andrew Burnett was on that team that time with Colorado. And like you said, I was, you know, playing a lot then. We were, you know, things were going well, or playing well. And it was tough. I think it did factor into that series. And I remember Andrew Burnett, one of the greatest compliments I ever got is Andrew Burnett said, Joe Sakic hates playing against you. You always play so hard against them. You're always, you know, cross-checking them, whacking them, playing them hard. And that's kind of how Jacques taught us to play. You always had to be hard to play against. And, you know, so to hear that from one of the top guy in the league that hated matching up against you, that was probably one of the, you know, the best, you know, compliments I ever got from another guy. Right. So it was, it was tough. It was tough to sit out that series and not be a part of it, not battle those guys that are Hall of Famers. Right. So it was fun for me as type of role that I was in to match up against those guys and try to do your job to the best of your ability. So.
Absolutely. Danny Sussman asks, and you did mention this earlier, that you give Chuck Fletcher some shit every now and then, but what is it like playing for and then being in the same front office with a GM who once traded you away?
Yeah, you know what? It's great, actually. As a player, it's hard because you don't have a lot of, you know, the general managers around and stuff. I don't know. I necessarily had a, you know, the relationship with a player and a GM is a little bit different when now you're on the management side. And I just think it's neat to see this and how he handles it behind the scenes. And I got this past year, we didn't have a development camp. The year before when I first started, that was my first kind of entrance into the development camp and then being around training camp. And he let me kind of sit in when he was sending like the young players back to their junior teams or the minor league teams and just kind of see the way he dealt with these young kids and the honesty that he had, where these kids were at in their career, where they needed to get to, why he was sending them down. And I think that goes a long way, just like the communication lines and just as a player to see that and how he kind of dealt with that. I know not a lot of people necessarily do that. So I was kind of, and it's been great working with him and working with Brent, who's really in tune with the prospects of the young guys, their draft picks and stuff has really been fun. And it's to be around these young guys and help out. It's really a fun role for an ex-player to be involved in and helping these young guys and kind of see from management to the coaches in the NHL to the American Hockey League coaches to to all these guys, kind of how it works behind the scenes in a player. You just kind of show up and do your job, which is great. But there's kind of a lot that goes into managing a team, the coaches, all this stuff, the work that they put in. So it's really, really fun to see behind the scenes and see someone, you know, Chuck and Brent, and the history that they have and the success they've had kind of building teams and managing teams. It's kind of fun to be a part of.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like, you never think about that. Like, you always see all these ex-players hired by organizations. It's sort of the new trend. I mean, it's happened forever, but it seems especially lately. Maybe it just feels that way because it's so many players that I covered.
Yeah.
Never think about how a GM actually teaches the job to that new development person or a new front office person. So that's amazing that Chuck let you kind of see how he deals with it. It shows you that he's sort of paying it forward for somebody that I'm sure aspires to, you know, to eventually get into a role like that.
Yeah, it's fun. Like I said, it's fun to be involved, and it's, you know, from my side, I don't know if I want to ever be a GM. The pressure these guys got,
yeah,
the stress they got to make moves, and you trade a guy or a prospect, and then it works out, doesn't work out. I mean, these guys got a lot of pressure, and you know, in my situation right now, I get a chance to do the fun stuff, right? Work with these young guys that are eager to learn and get better and want to make the NHL, right? So I really got a fun position, and I can see from all sides what a coach is thinking about a player, what the management is thinking about a player, and then I can listen to the player and hear where they think they're at and where they should be at and ultimately what I think they have to do to get there. So it's a fun role, and I really enjoy coaching my son now, and I know it's a small window till he kind of is old enough that I won't be able to coach him anymore. So it's kind of nice I can do both right now. But you know, maybe someday if you get more involved in coaching, I think is kind of where I would see my path a little bit. It's really fun to be around these guys and help on the game and still be a part of a team and around the guys in the locker room and really, like I said, pushing to try to win the cup that I never really got a chance to as a player. So,
well, if you think there's pressure in managing, there's definitely pressure in coaching.
No, for sure. That's why I'm thinking more like an assistant coach. So I don't have to, these head coaches. I mean, even if you win, even if you're proven and you win a couple years later, things start going like, I mean, it's a tough business. These coaches, there's a lot of great coaches out of jobs right now that won and can win. And it's, and a lot of good young coaches coming up. I mean, it's not easy to get into coaching and be a good coach. And I think there's a lot that factors in how you deal with players, especially now with the new generation of young players and how you have that mix with the older guys and everything. There's a lot going on, right? So, and having the guys really buy in and play for you. I had Craig Berube here as a coach. I absolutely love playing for it. It's a big reason why I re-signed a couple more years here. The opportunity he gave me here in Philly, and to see him going St. Louis and just the guys wanted to play for him. I think you have to have a coach that guys want to go play for you and do everything they can to win for you. So I think that's the ultimate thing when it comes down to coaching. So
yeah, you'll have to tell Chuck and Brent I say hello, and then text me sure. And then text me verbatim exactly what Brent says, because I'm sure it'll be sarcastic. Wild fans should forever be indebted to Brent Flair, because Brent was the one that drafted Kirill Kaprizov in the fifth round. If Wild fans don't know the story, that was the year that Jordan Leopold's daughter went public and wrote a letter and wanted Jordan Leopold to be traded to Minnesota. So they trade their fifth round pick. They don't have a fifth round pick. So at the draft table, Brent Flair, who thought, you know, throughout the draft that he wanted to get Kaprizov, thought he was first round talent, and they're in the fifth round. They actually traded their 2016 fifth because they didn't have their 2015 fifth and drafted Kaprizov. So, man, what a crazy story. Have you gotten to watch a little bit of Kaprizov or no?
Yes. I mean, he's a pretty special player, and it's fun to see what he's doing. It's fun to watch the Wild right now. I mean, man, they're a good team, and they're fun to watch. But yeah, these guys are, to go back to Brent and these guys, they put in a lot of work. I mean, these guys that are scouting players and out there, and Brent to be kind of in charge of that here and with the Wild as he was overseeing that and stuff. I mean, they really got to make sure who they're picking is the right guy. And if you can find kids like that down the, you know, the really good teams that draft well, find kids in the fourth, fifth round that they can really see an upside in. And they obviously saw something in Kirill. And I mean, it's really fun to watch him and fun to watch the Wild right now.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Let's go to this question. You talked about Mikko Koivu-Johnson from Wisconsin. What's your best non-angry Mikko story?
Non-angry story?
Yeah. So I used to dub whenever Mikko would get angry on the ice, I'd call it angry Mikko, and then he'd, you know, yeah, obviously be angry and go on and just you know, just annihilate opponents. So I think that's where that comes from. But what's your best non-angry, mean Miko story?
I don't know. Like you said, a lot of them probably have to do with him being angry and mad at somebody and everyone else kind of, you know, thinking it's funny or whatever, and him getting more upset. So I don't know the non-angry one, but I had a lot of, you know, great time. We went on a couple, you know, trips together, all-star breaks and stuff. You know, we had a lot of good time together. I remember him yelling at the pizza guy in Mexico one time and stuff. Didn't get the pizza in time. He should have thought it should have been free and stuff. And I'm like, we're in Mexico here. Let's just pay for the pizza. Like, we really got to get an argument with this guy about our pizza being 10 minutes late or whatever. So, I mean, there's always stuff where it seems like it has something to do with him getting upset or something not going right. So there's multiple stories of that stuff. But like I said, he just, you know, everything was, you know, it was just fun to be around him. And regardless of that, I think guys knew how he was and how to kind of push his buttons a little bit too, to get him going. So.
Yeah. And if you remember Nick Backstrom, Marion Gaborik, and Kyle Brodziak, if I remember correctly, came in for yeah. Miko's 1000 game ceremony. Unfortunately, Miko wasn't able to play that night, right? If I remember correctly, he got hurt.
That he had scored the OT winner or the shootout winner, I think, in his actual 1000 game or whatever. So it was it kind of sucked a little bit that he couldn't play in the game, but at least
he hung out in the suite with you.
Yeah, we got to hang out in the suite with him a little bit, which was kind of nice to be able to spend more time with him and not just at the party afterwards where he had a lot of people there and things to see. So that part of it was kind of nice to get some more time to hang out and catch up with him. So
Nick, last final questions for you. Anthony King says, if you're missing the wings at Barker's and Hudson, apparently this is somebody that knows you.
Missing the wings.
Did you go to Barker's and Hudson a lot or no?
Probably. Yeah. Well, we didn't live out that way, but probably we were there at some point. So I love wings. So if I was there, that's probably why. So no, Hudson's awesome spot or whatever. So even out there, some of the guys lived out that way. So it was a lot of great spots there. And I mean, Minnesota's a great, and out towards Hudson and stuff, a lot of good spots to go. So
were you the one that remember at the 2008 Republican National Convention, we were in Grand Forks for training camp because XL was hosting the convention. Yeah. And you guys, a bunch of people went to Buffalo Wild Wings and did a contest where they made, I think, Stefan Vayu eat the like super, super, super hot ones. And he showed up and his lips are burned. He could barely walk, like everything. Was that you? You're doing?
No, I was there, but that wasn't my doing for sure. I would never force that on anyone. I hate super hot stuff, and I love wings or like a little bit of spice, but not like crazy hot like that. I don't know how people do that, but Vayu would never turn down an opportunity, you know, with a challenge like that. So that's just the type of person he was.
You remember Bruce Brothers?
Bruce Brothers, yeah.
Yeah, he tweeted me, "Hey Nick, does anyone ever come into the dressing room wearing sandals?"
Wearing sandals? What does that mean?
Remember, I think you once pulled him aside and he used to wear sandals in the locker room, and you used to give him crap whenever he'd walk it by your stall. You'd be like, "Hey, nice sandals." So
I don't remember that. Yeah. But if you come into the locker room, you got to be ready for anything, right?
So Yep. You scored 30 NHL goals. Andrew McGinnis wants to know, what's the best goal you ever scored?
Best goal. One of the best ones, probably my first NHL goal, was against Roberto Luongo at home. Andrew Burnett set me up behind the net. Jersey Jim Dowd also was on the plaque for the assist. Two great, you know, teammates and friends that I got an opportunity to play with. Man, you talked about my dad. He was in the crowd that night or whatever. And I remember going to Kincaid's after for a steak or whatever with him. And he ordered. He's like, let's have a beer or whatever. And I wasn't 21 yet. And the server's like, "Are you of age?" And my dad's like, "Yeah, of course. Why else would I order a beer for him?" So, so that was kind of special. Just kind of the story of just, you know, having my dad there for my first goal and getting it on Roberto Luongo, obviously an incredible goaltender, and having those two guys set it up. So that was pretty special. I think guys always remember their first one, and just kind of the story with it after having my dad there and everything was pretty special. So
yeah, you guys were it was crazy how often you beat the Panthers back in the day and beat Luongo throughout his tenure. It was just it's just nuts. I'm just looking up real something. November 29th, I think this was the Wild won 6-0 Nick Schultz scored the winning goal, and the next day, Dwayne Sutter was fired as the Panthers coach. If I remember correctly.
Wow.
Yep. I just remember that to a T. Nice. I remember in my game story that night, if you look this up in the Sun Sentinel, I guarantee that you will find this, fans. I actually wrote that night that the Panthers' best save that night from Roberto Luongo was on an own goal potential by Nicholas Hagman. Nicholas Hagman took a slap shot on Roberto Luongo in a game that he was absolutely pummeled. And I remember I made that my entire lead in my story, that it's never good when the best save by your goalie is on your own teammate. Let me just see if there's anything else, stuff about the appendix, stuff about being a development coach. We've all talked about that. You know, who was harder to defend, Sakic or Aginla? That's a good question. Both were wild killers.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing that Aginla had is that he was tough and he wanted to beat the snot out of you, right? So he kind of had that in his game where Joe was just super skilled. Obviously, both guys could shoot the puck. So to defend those guys and the shot that they had, you had to be, you know, always not give them a lot of time and space and good stick on puck. And just like I said, play hard against them. Regardless, but I know again, like whenever you got him more fired up and played harder against him, he got better, right? So he lived for that and lived for those battles, right? So if you hit him or slashed him or whacked him, I mean, he wanted to pump you. So I mean, he had that kind of in his game where Joe didn't, but both guys were very competitive and obviously very, very skilled guys, and just with their shot and their ability were both really, really tough to play against. So
yeah, both super nice guys. Again, Lowe was like the nicest mean guy ever. Like, you know, you get him after the game and he was like super, super sweet. Just a couple more questions, Nick. Michael asks, what's your dream job outside of hockey?
Outside, when I was growing up as a kid, I always wanted to be a phys ed teacher, a gym teacher, just for the fact of working with kids. And I love sports, and I always loved gym class as a kid and being around all the different sports and the different seasons and doing all that stuff. So that was always kind of my dream job growing up if hockey hadn't worked out. And it still kind of is. I look at that and the kids go to school, and just so important for kids to be out and be active. And there's multiple sports and activities for them to learn. So I think I always thought that would be super fun to do, and still something if it had to, that I would really, you know, kind of love to do. So.
Final question of the show. And as everybody, it's a great question because, as everybody has seen here, Nick is as nice a guy, as humanly possible. But this person asks, Nick, you're known as an all around nice guy. What kind of situation makes you not nice?
Makes me not nice.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm sure my,
what pisses
sure
you off?
I'm sure my kids and my wife at home maybe have a different feel for that. So there's definitely things, like everyone says, behind closed doors a little bit different. No, but I'm a pretty calm guy or whatever. So it's, not much. I really, love coaching and being around, kids and stuff and my family and helping raise my kids and stuff. And I think the biggest thing is just, you know, people that don't put in their best effort or don't work hard. If I'm coaching or I'm helping my kids or watching them play any sport, if they're not working hard or not putting in the effort, that's probably the biggest thing, I think, with anything in life. If you're not going to put in the work and really give it your all, I think that's what really, you know, upsets me. Or if I see a kid on my team that's not trying or not working, or if it's one of my kids, it's the same thing. If you're going to go out there, do everything, you know, give it everything you got, and just kind of see what happens, right? So I think that's probably the number one thing that bugs me, people that don't put in the work and you know, wonder why things didn't work out for them, right? So I think that's probably the biggest thing. So
that's a perfect way to end the podcast, Nick. You know, it's amazing. You've been gone 9 years and yet you still second most games in Wild history, fourth most minutes, second in block shots. And, you know, and honestly, it still feels like I covered you yesterday. So, you know, I really, really appreciate you coming on. It was really just fun catching up with you.
Yeah, it was great. It was great being on, Mike. It's you've always, like I said, you've always been great to me, regardless of running into my Porsche or not. You've always always said kind things and been there, and always respected the work you do and following the team there and being an honest guy and doing the, you know, like I said, just it's fun to go on to The Athletic and read people that know the game and know what they're talking about. So I think you're doing a great job, and thanks for having me on.
Well, I really appreciate it. Send my best to Jess and Carol and Chris and Terrence. Sure. And you know, as always, I appreciate it. And if you're listening to this podcast, check out our comment section for each podcast episode at the Athletic app and rate and subscribe to Straight from the Source on Apple. If you aren't already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/straightfromthesource and receive a subscription for just $3.99 per month. Thanks a lot, Nick.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. That was fun.